overflowing with love. I am overflowing with happiness. I am filled with the power to make a change. You create a brand new life. I am overflowing.
Welcome to the podcast of the Sunday Celebration from the Center for Spiritual Living in Huntsville, Alabama. We hope you feel the grace, the beauty, and the love of our community as you hear the message of the week.
With the sound of the bell, we invite our attention to move from our heads into our heart, knowing that the tyranny of the mind oftentimes creates obstacles and conversations and confusion. But when that attention can rest in that still place within, and the breath can become conscious, and by that I mean we consciously take an inhalation and then we surrender with every exhalation, inviting the next in-breath to arise when it's ready to arise. And the simplicity of conscious breathing is that all we have to do really is to consciously exhale. The inhale comes by itself. And we are the witness of this simple practice, all because a bell took us to a place of peace. And our opportunity is to abide in that centered place in the midst of a world that seems to be spiraling out of control. Our opportunity is to rest as stillness, as emptiness, as peace, as deep contentment, as the smile of the moment. My beloved teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, would invite the smile within his heart, and he would allow that smile to gently move up to his face. And then he would rest in the smile. A smile that isn't conditional. It doesn't need something external to happen. But rather, it's an internal way of being. I see my baby Bert smiling at me now. He always had a sweet smile. Not so much the pug, but I can count on Bert's smile to sustain me in those moments when I should forget my own smile. And so we consciously participate in this experience called life by stopping. By stopping the thought patterns, even though thoughts will arise, we don't necessarily have to follow those thoughts. And there is a beautiful sense of peace when we know that the thoughts don't have dominion over us. They could be unkind thoughts, as a friend told me this morning. But with an exhalation, those unkind thoughts could drift away like clouds in the sky. And so they arose, because that's what the mind does, it thinks. But through a conscious exhalation, we are able to manage those thoughts and not let them become cause to our suffering. In the Four Noble Truths in Buddhism, they talk about all life is suffering. And the suffering arises, as the second noble truth, by those thoughts that torment us. And the third noble truth is we don't have to think those thoughts. And the fourth noble truth is breathe. and we're free, which is our true nature. And so we come here this Sunday morning to experience even a glimpse of this spaciousness that we all are. This Sunday we are going to the other shore. It is the idea from the Heart Sutra that when you get to the other shore, there is no longer you operating, but there is this divine loving presence that we all share in the control seat, if you will. And then that divine presence, that essence, that simple essence would say, I have arrived. I am home. I am no longer distracted by thought patterns, by physical sensations, by emotional entanglements, because I have learned their true nature is emptiness, empty of the self. And when I am no longer abiding in those mental programs, in those emotional upheavals, when I see them just as that, I can breathe again and set myself free. So this lifelong endeavor to go home starts with a simple breath. I invite you to touch your heart now and feel that beautiful space within you that is unconditionally loving. It's the truth of who you are, and it's the truth of who I am. And when you're ready to enter into this dance, this conversation, I invite you to open your eyes and look around you and see your own self reflected back. Because in truth, there is only one, and you are that one. Come on in, y'all. Oh, there's my beautiful songbird. I've been thinking of some beautiful songs for Emily. I dreamed a dream of long ago. So thank you for being here this Sunday morning. This is July, and in July I talk about my favorite subject, which is freedom. It was Thomas Jefferson that said, God hath made the mind of man free. That's a little sexist, but you could say, God hath made the mind of all of us free. But what we do with that mind is our experience. And so much of the torment that we go through is because we have these overactive minds that awfulize and strategize and plan things, and then we get stuck in the plan. I just came back from Maine. You know, the best thing is make no plan. And then you have an exquisite experience. But if you make a plan and the plan doesn't work out, I mean, we were supposed to have the house for 10 days to ourselves, but then Hurricane Irma, whatever was her name, Emma, Ursula, something like that. Came up the coast, and they were in the tugboat, and we get an SOS from the tugboat, come and pick us up, because Elsa's here. So what was to be a quiet 10-day retreat became a family experience. And, you know, it was a lovely experience. But once again, if you make a plan, and the plan isn't what you think it is, then you get to adjust. So what if life is one beautiful big adjustment? You know, we've had this pandemic going on for a very long time. It's so nice to see people out there without masks and these beautiful children who need the mask because we want them to be protected. And we think it's over until it isn't over. Up in Maine, it's like 80% vaccinated up in Maine. You felt really safe up there. You come back to Alabama and I think it's like 50%. And so I guess we have a pandemic of the unvaccinated now is what they're saying. And we get to look at that not with an angry mind, but with a proactive, creative way of operating. Someone gave me a little effigy of Bernie Sanders wearing a little blue mask. I thought he was so cute that I brought him into the center and I put him in the arms of the Buddha. So he's sitting there making a statement that if you haven't had your vaccination, for your own safety, wear the mask. I find myself on the airplane going back and forth from Maine. From the moment we got there, everyone is wearing a mask and they have the sound. Federal law requires that you wear the mask for your own safety. And so I learned that there's a little secret. If you go to the lunch and you order some tea and a sandwich, everybody's mask was off. And then I realized they were staying in the restaurant and they weren't going back to their seats. Now that was an angry thought, Nancy, but I had it. And I said, oh, there you are, my little thoughts. So yes, I you know, I do my talks months in advance, and this month was on freedom, and there was this book that I was going to teach, and it was called The Other Shore by Thich Nhat Hanh. He's one of the most enlightened teachers I've ever studied with. And this is a very complicated book because it's about the Heart Sutra, an ancient, ancient sutra. They say the highest insight comes from the Heart Sutra. And so I took this on the plane up there, and it was very challenging to read, very challenging to assimilate. And let me tell you, you guys aren't ready for this stuff. It's way too complicated because it's all about the simple idea that form is emptiness and emptiness is form. Now we know in our quantum mechanics that what you see here is a chair, but in reality it's a bunch of electrons and protons spiraling around. What you think is form is really something alive with nothingness. Well, there's a hint at this emptiness idea. But the tragedy was saying that we are empty. Some people think that means that we are non-existent. And so you can't say that all of this is an illusion, all of this is Maya, it doesn't exist, because you're sitting out there and you're looking at me and I'm sitting in this chair. So I do exist, but what you're looking at is the form. And what I've discovered at my 72 years of life is that what I am really is an invisible something, is an essence something, is a presence. It was Goethe that said, what is God but a simple essence, the cost of which is nothing less than everything? So if we would know our true nature as essence, well, then it requires that we identify with this invisible something, we'll call it spirit, if you will, and know that the form is temporary. And the basic premise, once this insight of the Heart Sutra awakens, there is the ultimate realization that there is no birth and there is no death. And so, as many of you know, last Sunday, Jodi did one of the most beautiful talks on being with death. She shared the story of my beloved Bert and how he made his transition 10 days ago today. But the Bert that made his transition, as she read in that beautiful eulogy to Strongheart, he was not a bunch of bones with skin stretched over him. He was a spiritual being, and he's still here with me. And he was with me on the whole trip, and it was kind of strange. And he's still with me now. So what if in these experiences that we have with life, when we lose the form, we get to then fall back to the essence that never left? Jodi gave me the privilege of speaking to him Thursday morning 10 days ago, and before she took him to the vets, and she said he lifted his head. And I remember saying, you know, I'll always be with you, and you'll always be with me. And that afternoon, he started coming to me. It started with a dog, looked like baby Speck. That afternoon, we went out and had lunch to try to go on with your life, and this dog comes running up to me, spitting image of baby Speck. Had the curled tail with the tip on it, the white tip, the four white paws, the little mask. And I thought, oh, Bert, you dragged this little dog over. They had a dog up in Maine whose name was Sweeney. And after Bert made his transition, Sweeney wouldn't leave my side. He sat at my feet the whole time. We went to bed at night. He jumped in the bed. He insisted on sleeping right between us. My sister-in-law said, you need to come to bed. She went to pull him out of the bed. He wouldn't leave the bed. So for 10 nights, Sweeney slept there right between us. And I said to him, I said, I think you came because Bert sent you. And he licked my face. And I went, oh, this is too much for me. So Bert's with us here today. And he wants to let you know that if you have a four-legged, you have a soul contract with them. When baby Speck made a transition, someone gave me a book called Soul Contracts, and they said every animal that you experience in your life has a soul contract with their human. They came to teach you, without exception, unconditional love. And so he's still teaching me, even from the other side. He didn't make his transition. I'll hear a song, and the song will be Karen Drucker singing, I'm always with you, I'm always with you, and my eyes fill up with tears, because I hear Bert saying, I'm always with you, where would I go? And you guys need me right now. So he crawls in the bed at night in a little dog named Sweeney. Won't leave my side. Thich Nhat Hanh, let me give you him before I go further. I can't handle my tears right now. Thich Nhat Hanh says, form is emptiness, emptiness is form. And he says, the word emptiness shouldn't scare you. It's a wonderful word. To be empty doesn't mean to be non-existent. He said, if you look deeply at your body, you can see your parents are living through you. Your grandparents live in you. All your ancestors and the whole history of life here on earth lives in this body. Thich Nhat Hanh loves to say, look at the piece of paper. The paper is empty of paper. When you look at the paper, you see the sunshine, you see the rain, you see the earth and the minerals, all non-paper elements. So the paper is empty of paper, but it's filled with everything else, just as you and I are. So he has this premise that we inter are. We are part of all of this and not separate from it. When you see yourself as separate, you suffer. You have unkind thoughts. But when you see yourself as part of everything, well, then everything is an aspect of your own self. And you see yourself in the birds that come to the bird feeder. You see yourself in the algae on the rocks if you're in Maine. You see yourself in the deer that walk through your yard. You see yourself in the cannabis plant that my nephew is growing in the backyard, and he calls her Helen. Helen, I never realized you were so beautiful. She's a plant. It's Maine. Things are different. So if you look deeply at your body, you see more than just yourself. The whole universe has a body, and that is... No, wait. Only one thing is missing from our body, and that is our own separate self. This is the illusion, the David person, the bird person, illusions. But the life is the real truth. So this is the higher idea. Only one thing is missing from our body, and that is our separate self. It's a separate existence. All phenomena contain the whole universe, and nothing can be by itself alone. One of my favorite Zen sayings is, you know why you're so miserable? It's because 99% of the things that you talk about are about you, and you aren't. That's an idea of emptiness. When you get past you, and you realize that you are the suchness of life, well then, wow, could we play in that arena, in that discovery process? He goes on to say, the body has been there for a long time, for millions of years. It is the continuation of many generations, and the body has never died. This is the Heart Sutra. Well, then what does the body do? I guess it, what don't they say in physics, Seamus, that energy cannot be created or destroyed, it just changes shape? So how would it be different for your spirit when the spirit is no longer comfortable? I remember Marie Mokri was a member of the center, and she was in the hospital, and they got called. I was teaching a class on Tuesday nights. She said, come to the hospital right away. Marie's dying. So I finished the class. I go to the hospital, and she's sitting up in her bed. She wasn't dying. She said, I thought this was it, David, and I wanted you to be there. And I said, wow. She said, yeah, everything was disconnecting. And I said, well, what do you think on the other side? And she says, you know what? When I die, I'll come back and tell you. Well, I went home that night, and she passed that evening. But she didn't wait. She came to me that night. And she basically said, like Jody in her beautiful talk, I'm still here. You have to tell my children I'm still here. I'm just not informed. They think you're crazy when you have these experiences. And so I went to my bookcase, as I do, and pull out a book for an oracle. I had to do her memorial service. And the book that kind of fell out was Conversations with God, Part 2. And I opened the book just like this. And the question that Neil Donald Walsh asks God was, does the soul die? And God, through Neil Donald Walsh, says, no, the soul doesn't die because the soul was never born. But in an instant when that soul is no longer being served by that body, that soul can leave that body. Well, that's what happened to Marie, and I think that's what happened to Bert. Because Jody said on the very last moment, his body had betrayed him. He fought to use that body, but the body said, my body can't do it anymore. But his spirit went right through the crown chakra, and Moot came up to Maine, and he's been with me ever since. Jody said he's like glitter. He's everywhere. And I cannot take the body lightly in the Heart Sutra. It is not mine alone. I cannot understand this body. Rather, it is the body of all my ancestors. So the mind is in the body. The mind gives rise to the body, and the body gives rise to the mind. But in this body, all the wonders of the life of the cosmos are to be found. The realm of no birth and no death, the pure land, and the kingdom of God are also in this body. I cannot take it lightly. It contains all the mysteries of the cosmos. So what if we could regard this not just as a bunch of flesh and bones, but as this beautiful crucible for the universe? And we get to tune into this body in a very sacred sort of way. What is it telling you? The body never lies. If you've taken yoga classes, the body will tell you when something doesn't feel right. Could we learn to listen intuitively to this incredible instrument that contains so much? This is the Heart Sutra, a little bit more. The body is also a wonderful flower of the cosmos. I want to take good care of it. I want my body to reveal to me all the mysteries and all the wonders of the cosmos. And lastly, this body will be continued in many other forms. Whether I have children, whether I have grandchildren or not, I want this body to continue beautifully for many, many years to come. So in this Heart Sutra, the first thing is form is emptiness, emptiness is form, but the form is void of a separate self, and yet we have a form. And then he talks about the five skandhas. Now, so you see why I'm not teaching this. The emptiness not only is of the body, but the emptiness is of the feelings. Feelings arise, but we're not those feelings. That's why Thich Nhat Hanh will say, oh, there you are, my little anger. You can be around someone who's angry. Trey and I watched on the plane coming back this beautiful movie, I think it was 5 years ago, called Pride. And it was about the coal miners in South Wales. They went on strike, and the police were, you know, beating up the people on the picket line. And the only friends they could find were the gays in London. And this is a true story, but the picket line people didn't want to deal with those kind of people. So you saw these two disparate groups coming together for solidarity. And it was a beautiful healing experience because their anger, their frustration at Margaret Thatcher created a sense of synergy, and they came together to fight for their own freedoms, even though they were from two different sides. I'm hoping that that will happen in the United States. I heard while I was up in Maine that 60% of Southerners want to secede from the Union. Does that mean I have to move to Maine if I want to stay a part of the country? I don't know. You know, you read things up in Maine that are kind of strange up there. He says, emptiness is impermanence. Emptiness is change. Buddhism comes down to three simple things. Everything changes. That's impermanence. The second thing, everything is connected. We're all woven into a tapestry, one life. And then the third aspect of Buddhism is, so pay attention. Pay attention. You know, you won't know that spirit is still there until you kind of turn around and you realize they don't leave. I see Bert everywhere in the house. Am I going crazy? Or is he hanging out? Jody's smiling. She knows he's hanging around. He wouldn't let us go without him. So at the very end, he says, in the same way, instead of complaining about impermanence, we might say, thank you to impermanence. Because of you, everything is possible. Long live impermanence. This is the very optimistic thing to say, as Nisargadatta verse continues. Without emptiness, nothing is possible. And so we should celebrate emptiness and declare, long live emptiness. Thank you to emptiness. That means life is possible. If you didn't have things ending, you couldn't have things beginning. How many of you have been through a bad relationship and it needed to end? Wow. And so when we embrace change, when we embrace the impermanence, then life can be a beautiful dance of intimacy. Now, the hardest part for me was the very end of the book, where he said, once you have this insight of the Heart Sutra, you come to the realization that there was no birth and no death. Birth comes to form, but spirit was never born and never dies. And so here's how Thich Nhat Hanh brought clarity to this. He said, nothing is created and nothing is destroyed. So the notion of birth is created in our mind alone. However, as soon as we think there is birth, it implies that there also must be death. He says, but the ultimate nature of reality is that nothing was ever born and nothing ever dies. Again, I think of Strongheart and Jody's beautiful reading. To be born means that from nothing you become something, but that is not the case. Look at a cloud. Before the cloud appeared in the sky, she was not nothing. She was the water in the ocean. She was the heat that was generated by the sun. She was the water vapor that was rising up into the sky. And when we can no longer see the cloud in the sky, she hasn't died. She's just transformed herself into rain or to snow. So the notion of death is also created by our mind alone. It is impossible for something to become nothing. The cloud has not died. It is manifesting in the new form as the rain, as the hail, as the snow, as the river, as the cup of tea in my two hands. So the true nature of the cloud is no birth and no death. Now, he uses simple examples so we can get a bigger idea of the truth of what we are. And then we get to rest as that. My prayer partner was telling me today that one of his clients read a book, and she says, I'm spiritual now. It's as if you can read a book and you become spiritual. And I reminded my teacher, Kennedy Schultz, when someone would say, well, this isn't spiritual, he would turn to them and raise his eyebrow and say, everything is spirit, and walk away. And in that moment, he and I both saw this man who's now been dead for 21 years, was alive in us. You know, it's all spirit. How could it not be spiritual? And so when we see things from a spiritual perspective, we're identifying on a different plane of action. You know, the theme for this month is ordinary freedom. Spirit is free, whereas the mind is not. The body can be not free if we're bound by the body's intelligence. The emotions cannot be free until you realize the emotions are empty of really a self. And so we don't identify with the angry thoughts. Yes, they arise. They're going to arise. But their emptiness there. So I didn't give you the five skandhas. The body is empty. The feelings are empty. Perceptions are empty. Have you noticed how your perceptions have changed through a lifetime? You know, I used to believe God was up in the heavens like Santa Claus with a big gold G. Well, that perception changed. Then I didn't believe there was a God. Well, then I became God. And I thought, wow, perceptions keep evolving. Perceptions are empty. Mental creations are all empty of truth because they're your mental things. You want me to tell you what I think? Not really. And the last thing, and this is the most amazing one, Seamus, consciousness is empty. Consciousness that we all share. The consciousness of the rock, the consciousness of the tree. Now that's easier to see, isn't it? So when we move into this realization, he says, you realize there is no birth and there is no death. We are eternal beings. Isn't that much nicer to know that Joe O'Neill's sitting right next to Sylvia, smiling, and Paul is right there with his beautiful open heart right next to you, and Doretta, in her crazy sort of way, sitting behind you, Gigi, telling you, I think I need to go. He's speaking too strangely. Everything in the universe is like that, even you and I. We are not subject to birth and death. A Zen master might ask a student the following question. What was the face of your parents before you were born? This is an invitation to go on a journey to recognize yourself in all your various manifestations. And if you look deeply, you will see your former lives as well as your future lives. This is not abstract philosophy, but rather this is reality. So look at your hand and ask yourself, how long has this hand been here? How many generations have you experienced? And this is just a stepping stone into an alternative way of perceiving life. And at the end of the book, he says, and when this insight, and you can listen to it on YouTube, there is a mantra at the end of the book. Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisvaha. Gate, gate, paragate, parasamgate, bodhisattva. Gate, gate means gone, gone. Paragate, everything is gone. Parasamgate, and you're now at the shore. Bodhisvaha, hail, the Buddha has awakened within me. So when everything is gone, all the identity, all the paroxysms of thought and emotion are gone, then you get to the other shore where you're free of you, and then you've arrived in this consciousness of the one that knows no other. Now that's the ultimate place of enlightenment according to this little Thich Nhat Hanh book called The Other Shore. It's a hard read, but if you can allow it to move within you, it'll change your life. The strangest thing happened when I was in Maine. I found that my mind was empty all the time. It's as if I couldn't have a conversation. I was hanging out in emptiness. I was hanging out in this beautiful peace. When I spoke to Jody Thursday morning after Bert made his transition, I texted her back and I said, I'm feeling this profound peace. He's no longer struggling, you know? And his beautiful spirit was with me and I was just hanging out in that place. I didn't want to have conversations. I didn't want to go to parties. I just wanted to abide in that emptiness. It was, and I thought, is something wrong with me? Because I'm just in this flow of nothingness. And so Jody asked to borrow my book, The Anamkara. And she placed it on the dining room table when I came home. And this is a class that I've taught several times here at the center. And the Anamkara means the soul friend, and so many of you are the soul friend. Bert was a soul friend. Because when you have a connection at the soul level, it's one that doesn't die. It's one that's eternal. And so he was asked, this beautiful Celtic monk left the monastery, became a real man. I'm sorry, anyway, he loved to talk about death in this book. And I thought I would just share with you what he says. He says, when the soul leaves the body, it is no longer under the burden and control of space and time. He says the soul is then free. And distance and separation hinder it no more. That's why Bert could come up to Maine. He wasn't bound by it in Alabama dimension. Meister Eckhart was once asked, how does the soul of a person go? Where does the soul of a person go when a person dies? And Meister Eckhart said, nowhere. Where else would the soul be going? Where else is this eternal world? It can be nowhere other than right here. And he says, we falsely spatialize an eternal world. We have driven the eternal into some kind of distant galaxy called the Kingdom of Heaven. Yet the eternal world does not seem to be a place, but rather is a different state of being. And he says, the soul of the person, and I would say the soul of all life, including our pets, goes no place because there's no place else for it to go. And this suggests that our beloveds are here with us in the air that we are moving through all the time. The only difference between us and them is that they are now in an invisible form. You cannot see them with the human eye, but you can sense the presence of them through the love that you experience, which never dies. And with the refinement of your soul, you can sense them being with you, and you feel that they are always near. Wow. So I guess I'm not going crazy, Jody Wootenberg. Could we open to that sense of... And if the Heart Sutra is geared toward a change in how we perceive the world, he says, one of the great gifts when you go to this other shore is you realize that there really is no death and there is no birth. Then, when we do experience the birth of something, it's not just the birth of this form, it's kind of an ancestral birth. God knows how many lifetimes we've lived that reincarnate in this lifetime. I think that I am my grandfather reincarnated, David Leonard, who died before I was born. My mother said he was one of the kindest men, and he was very spiritual, there's that word again, and he gave my mother a little book called Lessons in Truth by Emily Cady, which is the Bible of the Unitarians, in a sense. And she said this little book sustained her. Well, he was 45 years old, and he was a dentist, and I think he had an eye for the ladies. I'm not sure, because he had a heart attack on a dance floor with another woman in his arms, not his wife. That was the big scandal. Now, I happen to be a dancer, and you know, you dance with the one who wants to dance. Trey never liked to dance, so if I'm out there and Tia wants to dance and I'm on a dance floor, it's not me. And so he had the Widowmaker, and so when I came along, they named me after him. And the longer I live, I'm beginning to sense that maybe I was the second go-around for this man. And it's kind of a comforting feeling to know that he got a second chance at life. And I guess he smiled a lot. I'm going to be teaching this new class in August, and it's one that I've taught before. It's called Falling into Grace. It's one of my favorite classes. It's by Ajahn Shanti, another teacher of mine. And I begin to realize that everything is grace. When you get to the other shore, it's all grace. Even the problems are grace. If you're going through struggles, and at the end of this other little book, The Other Shore, he says, when you get to the other shore, there are no more obstacles. Any of you out there who have obstacles? When you get to the other shore in consciousness, you don't have obstacles anymore. They become opportunities. And so when something happens and you go, oh, this can't be happening, you meet it with a different way. My prayer partner has a boat in Vancouver, and it's been very, very hot up there. And he says, it's hard to sleep at nights because people don't have air conditioning up there. And so he thought he was going to simplify his life by getting a boat, but then the boat had to be lifted out of the water and had to be painted and had to be scraped and had to be... So he says, for 2 weeks, he's been dealing with this boat. And I said, has it been an obstacle? He said, it's been the glorious dance. I said, that's because you're a Virgo and he loves challenges. He said, it took 2 gallons of paint to paint the bottom of my boat at $250 a gallon. I said, boy, the paint's expensive up there in Canada. But he said the whole experience was a joy, just like resurrecting a little butterfly after 8 months in a jar. I would have thrown the jar out. But thank God that Jean is kind of lazy and she had the jar sitting in her room. 8 months after gestation, that little butterfly, swallowtail, came out of that jar. She took it outside and it took off into the trees. Little stories like that. That's grace. That was grace, a story of grace. So at the very end of the book, I want to share with you this before we go into a closing meditation. This is what grace looks like. This is the other shore incarnate. You know, I said at the revealing service, I'm in a state of grace. So this is what grace looked like. He says, grace is all around us. He says, if we have only the eyes to see it, the good moments are grace, and the difficult moments are grace, and the confusing moments are grace. There is grace in every situation, in each person that we meet, no matter how easy or difficult we perceive them to be. Our hearts will flower, and we will be able to express the peace and the love that each of us has within us when we call it grace. It's the givingness of the universe, and sometimes it doesn't look really comfortable, but it's grace. When an elephant kisses you on the side of the cheek, it's grace. That actually happened to a friend of mine. We let go into this grace, he says. It's something that we fall into, like we fall into the arms of another person, or we put our head on the pillow as we go to sleep. Isn't that a lovely image, just to sit back in your chairs and you're in that state of grace? You don't have to earn it. You don't have to beg God for it. You just have to say, whatever might be in your experience, it occurs within a vast space of peace, of stillness, and of ultimate well-being. That's what was occurring for me up in Maine. I was in this beautiful place of deep peace where thoughts didn't seem to arise. And if we can let go for just a moment, if we can relax, if we can fall into the center of now, we can encounter directly the freedom that we've all been looking for. It's already there. Stop your seeking. It's seeking you. And he says, it is right here. It is right now. It doesn't lie in the future somewhere. It's not going to come when your life changes or when the circumstances of your day-to-day reality become different. So many people think they have to change something to experience grace. You have to change nary a thing. Freedom is something that's right in the midst of this sacred moment. And when we begin to surrender our demand that life should change, then the life alters itself to suit our ideas, well, then everything opens. And we begin to awaken from this dream of our separateness, from the dream of our struggles. And then we realize that the grace that we were always seeking is actually right there at the center of our own existence. Wow. Just open to that beautiful moment. I love when Jody says everything is well all the time because it is. Wow. So then something happens. It's really uncomfortable, but it's uncomfortable. That's just an uncomfortableness, but it's a gift. So he goes on to say, the heart of spiritual awakening is to realize that we've always yearned for the very thing which is already there. It's always been there, and it is our inherent freedom. It's always available to us. And in those very moments, when we know we don't know, when we take a backward step and let our heart open wide, well, then we just fall into the grace. Bubba Jake is going to Jackson Hole, and he doesn't know where he's going to live. But you know, he's going to land somewhere that's beautiful. He doesn't have to know. We don't have to know what's going to happen with this country. We just get to know that we're going to bring our island of decency and our greater sense of participation. And we're going to be there for each other as we take the next step, not knowing the outcome, but knowing that we are the space that is required for this shift to take place, where we come together as one life, supporting one another, just like they did in Wales in 1984, when who would have thought that the coal miners and the gays would come together in solidarity? If it can happen in Margaret Thatcher's England, well, it can happen here. So I'm going to ask Glory G, the master of the bell, to give me three dongs, and then we're going to go into a little closing. And so as the bell tolls, we once again let our attention rest in that spaciousness of our beingness, of our suchness, of the emptiness that we all are. Empty of thought, empty of emotion. Empty of our conclusions. There's a freedom there. This is what the Heart Sutra calls the other shore. We've arrived at this place where we're free of the small self who seems to have been running the show for so much of our life. Now it's sitting in the back seat and it's just resting because we have a higher order of intelligence that's guiding us on this journey to nowhere, or as Wayne Dyer would say, to now here. So we journey to the now, to the here, to a conscious breath that takes us home. And then our simple practice can be one of exhaling. The exhale being a letting go of whatever it is that seems to be challenging us. And then invite spirit to do the inhalation on her own terms. We can participate by drinking her in deeply, and we can give thanks through every exhalation, knowing that we are using a conscious practice that may seem very simple, but is deeply profound. The lovely Thich Nhat Hanh would say, breathing in, I breathe in, and breathing out, I breathe out. And then he would say, in, out. He would say, this is the simplest and yet one of the most meaningful meditations you can do. Breathing in, I breathe in. And breathing out, I breathe out. In. Out. And now in your mind's eye, see yourself on the other shore. The shore of emptiness. The shore of freedom, the shore of eternal life, where you can experience all who've made their transition are still there with you, because they're in this invisible space that we share. And they're connected so deeply in that heart space. And so life is no longer a matter of getting what we want, but life becomes a practice of loving what is, of being with what is, and saying yes, 1,000 times yes. This is the life that I have been given. Rejoice and be glad in it, in every way. A life that was never born, and a life that will never die. It's an ordinary freedom that is given to all of us, but we must take it. Knowing that you are as free as that little butterfly that came out of her jar after 8 months in a cocoon, and through the simple lifting of a lid, the spirit, the butterfly, soared up into the heavens. And we too can soar out of whatever cage and container we've been in through the simple decision to set ourselves free. I invite you to find that smile within your heart and place your hands again against your heart. And let's join together in the heart salutation after we've just finished talking about the Heart Sutra. The heart salutation says, I honor you.
I honor you.
I respect you.
I respect you.
I love you.
I love you.
You are the deepest aspect of my soul.
You are my deepest aspect of my soul.
The beloved presence within me.
The beloved presence within me.
Bows to the beloved presence within you.
Bows to the beloved presence within you.
And we set it free.
And we set it free.
To soar.
To soar.
To be.
To be.
To dance,
yes.
As emptiness dancing.
As emptiness.
Open your eyes, open your hands, let your light shine, because you are that butterfly. Thank you for sending your ties in out there in the virtual world. And thank you all for being here. Happy trails until we meet again.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. For more information, please visit www.cslhuntsville.org.